meeting to order. Time is 11:12. Today is Thursday, February 12, 2006. Present, we have Representative Lynn, Representative Thomas, who's supporting our Seahawks. Representative Wilson, Representative Salmon, Representative Gatto, and myself, Chair Newman. Let the record reflect, we do have a quorum. Today we're going to be taking up the following legislation, HB 345, raised the school attendance rate from 16 to 17 by Representative Weirach. The other bill that was scheduled today was canceled at a request of the sponsor. They're trying to get some more information, I think, for us to make sure they have a complete packet. So that would be House Bill 140. So right now we'll begin by introducing Jacqueline Tupou from Representative Weirach's office. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jacqueline Tupou, and I'm staff for Representative Bruce Weirach. And the House Bill 345 that you have in front of you there, it changes the compulsory school age from 16 to under 17. I had some questions from members about what specifically that meant. So current state law states you're 15, and then the day that you turn 16, you're able to drop out of school. This bill would change it so you're 16, and then the day you turn 17, then you could drop out of school. So just a clarification up front, because some members had it.
Can we turn up the volume? Yeah, I don't have 105 howitzers in my ears in a long time ago.
Please move the speaker closer to you, ma'am.
All right, with that, Mr. Chairman. So to continue on, though, we think that this is a very, very important policy decision for our state to make. 16-year-olds are not ready to make the enormous decision to drop out of school and no longer continue their education. And so by mandating that they remain in school, you're increasing their opportunities exponentially. And I don't want to inundate you with too much information and facts and statistics, but we have piles and piles of information in our office about the opportunities for education, further education, and to make money in this life for people who are dropouts versus people that have graduated high school. And I think the evidence is pretty indisputable that those people that graduate high school will be much more successful in this life financially and in other aspects. Only two states have a worse dropout rate than the state of Alaska. And so we think we can do better. And by allowing our school districts to really implement programs to help retain students, we feel will be a better outcome for the whole state of Alaska. And, you know, we've heard the argument, you know, we don't want to pay for this. These are things that we either pay upfront costs or we pay triple costs down the road. Because half of the people on our welfare system and half of the people in our state's correctional system are high school dropouts. And so we think it's a problem that we should address on the front end by helping them to continue their education and have more opportunities in this life. So I would urge you to pass this important piece of legislation.
Jacqueline, yesterday my office and I believe some of the other committee members' offices, oh, by the way, Representative Gare is here for the record, received a flurry of emails concerning this. I brought you down a copy of those emails and asked you to maybe correlate if there was any common questions that were aligned in there. Did you do that? What were those questions? And could you address those questions so that the people who did submit those emails, we can answer those and be responsive to the public?
Yeah, and I think, Mr. Chairman, a first thing that I think some of the people in the emails that they didn't have a fundamental understanding of state law, there's 12 exemptions for this mandatory school attendance. And so if you fall in one of those 12 categories, then you needn't be continuing your education. Obviously, one of those is already obtaining a high school diploma. If you have a high school diploma, then you are no longer required to go to school beyond that. And one of the important things, I think, is one of those exceptions is that you can go to your local school board. And if you have a specialized reason for not needing to be in school at that point, then they have that option to help you opt out of the mandatory attendance. And so I think that that's important to note, that there is some local control and oversight for those special case-by-case basis that they feel an exception. One of the second things that we saw in the email, Mr. Chairman, was that they felt it was a poor public policy to fund those students that didn't want to be in school, that they didn't think we were being good stewards of tax dollars by paying for those children's education. And if their parents didn't want to make them go and wanted to write them off, then we should just write them off too. And I think that I've sort of addressed that in my initial comments by saying, if the concern is the financial aspects, which I would hate to think that it was, I would like to think that we think investing in our children's education is the most important priority. I know, you know, I've worked on numerous campaigns and seen campaigns. I know that legislators always talk about how education is so important. It's their number one priority. It's the number one thing that they want to fund. And so we've got emails that are sort of contradictory to that, though. Some of the emails were concerned that they didn't want to spend the money. And like I've said, it's a matter of spending the money up front, or half of the people on our welfare system and half the people in our correction system are high school dropouts. So we can see how the cost would add up down the road. And I think those were the two main concerns that we saw in the email.
Do we have any other questions from our committee? Representative Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You made a comment that you're concerned about the dropout rate. If the school districts are truly concerned about the dropout rate, maybe we should change the student count to the end of the year instead of the start of the year, so that at the end of the year they actually get an actual count of the students they have and they've been teaching. Again, be an incentive of watching the dropout rates and reading about them. A lot of them may be forced either by a bad teacher or lack of bad teachers. Maybe it could be the school or in it themselves. So rather than trying to save them from themselves, I would prefer that you move the student count to the end of the year and adjust it, you know. And again, you know, it'd be incentive if I was a teacher or a superintendent or administration to make sure that the students stayed in school. And I don't support pushing the age up to from 16 to 17. I think if a student wants to quit, they're not going to sit there and get A's because you're going to make them stay another year. I think that if they don't want to go to school, they're going to get straight Fs, and it's just going to be a burden to Representative Lynn or Wilson, because I'm going to sit here and distract him and say, hey, Bob, you know, keep bothering him so he won't learn. So I think if they want to go, let him go. And any concern about the cost of him sitting there, yes. So that's why I said then, if you move this up, if we move this, then move the student count to the end of the year, and then maybe you feel a little better, and yeah, you can keep the child there, but then make people work to keep them there.
Through the chair, to answer that, I would say two things to that. One, as far as financial incentives, you know, I don't think that this bill is the exact vehicle, but it is something maybe you want to look into. But on the second count, I would say, and maybe I'm a little dew-eyed or bright-eyed, but I would think that the teachers' motives were a little more altruistic, that they wanted the students to be there and they wanted to help them. I know here in Juneau, we have our superintendent here who will testify a little bit further, but they have three dropout counselors and they've really tried to address this. I work a lot personally with youth, and it seems like if there's an adult that really cares, that they do want to stay in school. A lot of times I think dropouts are stigmatized as maybe they're just lazy. But we've really found, and research shows, that they're not generally lazy, that there's a secondary problem. Maybe the parents are going through a divorce. You know, maybe they're having some problems at home. There's all these different things. And so when people are really interested, and they really care, that they do want to stay in school, and it's not that they just want to be disruptive and lazy, but that we need to help these children and not just wash our hands of them because they've decided a day older than 15 that they just want to drop out and limit their opportunities for education and for advancement for the rest of their life. We think that as a matter of public policy that this committee should decide to work with these children because they're not hopeless causes, that they are something that is our bright future. And if we don't make them our bright future, then they're going to be our welfare or correction problem down the road.
Yes, Representative Lim, just to make a comment on Representative Thomas's comment on moving the student count to the end of the year, and discussions that I've had with the Department of Education on that, there is a concern of transient population where they do the average daily membership count at the beginning of the year, which we have to base our funding formula on, and that's per school and where that money goes to the schools. And there has been suggestions to do a count again in January to account for the transient, but I don't know what implications they may have to do it at the end of the year. if that helps answer that question that you had. Representative Lynn?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am a retired public school teacher. I've served in the combat zone. I've taught regular education, I've taught special education, and I've certainly attempted to teach students who didn't want to be there. And I think everybody on this committee, probably everybody, every good parent, every good teacher, certainly wants our kids to get a good education, and that would include a high school diploma. But trying to force a 16 or a 17-year-old kid to be in school, or more importantly, to study and be an appropriate student when in school, or something like trying to push a bowling ball uphill with a piece of wet spaghetti. It just doesn't work. It's a recipe for classroom disruption. It's not fair to the teacher. It's not even fair to the kids themselves. I applaud the goals of this. We all want our kids to stay in school. They need to have a good education. But we also have to think about the other kids in the classroom who may be disrupted by the kids who really don't want to be there and maybe should not be there. And, you know, again, I applaud the intent of this bill, but it's almost a nanny kind of thing, you know, where the school is babysitting kids or who shouldn't be there in the first place. And I have some real problems with it. But don't misunderstand. I want everybody to get a high school, educated high school diploma.
Through the chair, I think, again, there would be two points that I want to make. First, so if they're 17, they could drop out. So we're only talking about people the day after they're 15 and they turn 16 for that one extra year, which is shown to be very critical in the research that we've done. The second thing that I would say, I think this is a matter of the state making a public policy. We want children to be there until they're 17. But I think you're right. There should be a holistic approach on the local level. But we've allowed local school boards to have that control. Again, like our local superintendent is here, and she can tell you about what they're doing here. I think you are correct, though. This is the piece of state legislation which should be part of a holistic plan from the local school boards of what are we going to do to combat dropouts. And the other thing that I would say to your comments, if you would prefer that those children aren't at school, where are they going to be? And where are we going to pay for it elsewhere?
A follow-up.
Representative Lynn?
It's not the business of the school to worry about where these kids are going to be if they're not in school. The purpose of the school is to educate in the best way we can the kids who are there. It's not the purpose of the school to imprison kids so they're not out on the street doing things that they should not be doing. Schools should not be babysitters. They should not be a holding pen for students because they might be out on the street doing things they shouldn't be doing. That's not the purpose of education. The best way to keep kids in school, whatever variety they are, is to provide a quality education, to supply an education that's appropriate to their particular needs, and that in many cases might include more attention to vocational education. All kids are not academically talented. All kids are not vocationally talented. I know I'm certainly not vocationally talented. I wouldn't do well at that. But it's not the job of the school to keep them in school because they might get in trouble if they're not in school. That's public safety. That's parents. That's everybody else.
Through the chair, to respond to that, I think you're right. I did have a bit of a logical fallacy there. You're right that they shouldn't be babysitting them. So I would say I'd want to frame this piece of legislation a little differently. At what point do we think that children should be able to make the decision that will impact the rest of their life? And we're talking about specifically, generally, children whose parents don't care. So if their parents don't care, at what point does the state stop caring and say you're old enough to make that decision yourself? And we feel the day after you turn 16 is too early to make a decision that will adversely affect your whole life. And we feel as a matter of public policy that the state should set this message out there. We want children in school so much that we are requiring it. If you look in your packet, I'd like to just give you, I didn't want to give you too many statistics and too many things, but so if you look in your packet, there's a handout there about what the different ages are for different states. And it's true that a majority of the states, 28 of the states, are at the age of 16. 9 states are at the age of 17, and 17 states are at the age of 18. But currently, there's actually legislation pending, including our own, in four other states, so five states total, that are looking at increasing that age. When these laws were generally set, it used to be enough to maybe have a 10th grade education. Maybe it was enough to have a high school diploma. We know now, with the advancements in technology, how important education is. It's not a matter of how much education is going to get you by today. And that amount of education is significantly higher than it's been in the past, just to be able to function in our society. And so I think, you know, by allowing kids to drop out, say, in the 10th grade, is the job that you're qualified for when you're in 10th grade, are you going to decide at the age one day over 15 that that's the job that you want for the rest of your life? Add into having a spouse. Add in having children. And that's going to be the income that you're set at as far as formalized education. But I really agree with you, Representative Lynn. I think there needs to be a holistic approach. And those are things that are legislative, and those are things and decisions that are made on the local level. But as far as state policy, we want children to stay in school until the day after they turn 17.
Go ahead, we had Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I wish I was a higher power and would be able to determine the right number. And I don't think the number is 16 or 17. I would bet that somewhere in the vicinity of 0 to 21, there is a perfect number. And we've been using 16 without any evidence that 16 is the best number. Now we want to change to 17 without any evidence that 17 is the best number, except for the evidence that you've indicated. That is that two states have a worse dropout rate. I'm concerned about our dropout rate, but also as a teacher, I dreaded troublemakers in my class and told them to leave the class, go to the hall, and then somebody would come by and say, we can't have kids in the hall, put them right back in the class. And now we'd be right back in trouble again. I have a great fear that if we tell a kid, you're going to stay in school whether you like it or not, why don't we pick until graduation? Why do we want to say until 17? Why do we want to even have compulsory education? I don't have those answers yet. So if you can tell me why we should have compulsory education, and it should be up to age 17 and not longer and not shorter, then I'd like to know what those answers are.
Through the chair, as far as some information on that, the information is sort of skewed, because if you can get kids to their senior year, then only 10% of them generally drop out their senior year. That information, I'm a little hesitant to tell you that, because it's a little skewed, because you'd figure, well, you'd weeded out all the undesirable or the kids you wanted to wash your hands of, you know, earlier. So there's not really concrete evidence that I could give you, because I think that number's a little skewed to say, well, but generally, if you can get kids to their senior year, then they understand a little bit better the importance of why to stay. And they've stayed the course so long that generally, if someone works with them, they try to graduate. As far as the case for compulsory education, I think that's such an exhaustive question that I could be here all day answering the merits of education. But I know that we as a society have deemed that we want to educate all children. And I think I would be really hesitant to say that you're 15 and then the day you turn 16, that's the day we wash our hands of you. If there's no parental involvement and no one else cares, then we won't care either. I don't think that's the message that we want to send as a state. But again, like Representative Lynn said, it is a part of a holistic policy that needs to happen at the local level. But this is what we can do at a state level to encourage that, to get rid of the deplorable statistic that we're the second, there's only two states that have worse dropout rates than us. It's obviously a huge problem here in the state of Alaska, and I do believe this is the first step in addressing that. And so I would urge you to search your hearts and to really feel for those kids and to feel what is the message that you want to send regarding education.
On that point.
Just a second, Representative Lynn. We've got some other people in front of you. I'd like you to be able to speak to your point. I'd like to just make a comment, Jacqueline, on the speaking from your heart. I think a lot of the concern that I'm hearing from parents and members of this committee is, does government know what's best for a parent's child? Where does that decision lie? And I think that that's a large part of this discussion. Representative Guerra.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Jacqueline, you've done a really good job. You've taken some really hard questions, and I think the questions would have caused some legislators to flee this room. So, good job. I suspect there's some truth to what everybody has said, including those who support the bill. I think there are some kids who don't want to learn, and by forcing them to go to school, they are going to be disruptive. I think there are some kids who come from families who could care less about their education, and in those families, I think the kids would be harmed by a flip decision by a parent to say, okay, you don't have to go to school anymore. So there's, I think there's truth on both sides, and so I want to think this one through very strongly. What I'd like from you is any I'd like to maybe hear from school officials and or folks who have done studies to say what are the impacts of requiring kids to stay at 17. I think the answer is going to be there's some benefit and there's some harm, and so I want to consider that real seriously. The rest of my comment is really directed to the other folks on the committee. You know, I feel like sometimes we're going shopping for Thanksgiving and we're spending all our time deciding what color napkin to buy, and we haven't bought the food. And you have to do everything you can to sort of educate children from the youngest age to the oldest age that they're in school. The longer you wait, the less chance you have of impacting a kid. So we're talking about what happens to kids who aren't doing well by the time they're 16. We can help some of them, and some of them we just can't. But I think we should focus our attention on the years where kids are most susceptible to learning, where their brains are developing the most rapidly, where we're going to have the most impact on them. And you're going to see, I filed legislation to start pre-K education in the state. Others have talked about it too. That's where we're going to have the biggest impact, and I want to spend some more time talking about that so that we can have an impact on kids that will be the most meaningful. Not that the 17-year-old issue isn't important, but I think that we should be spending our time addressing the issues that we'll have the most impact with. So any evidence that you have on the 17-year-old issue, just get to us, and it's an interesting issue.
And through the chair, if I could make 2 points. One, you know, we've talked a lot about how the kids are disruptive in the class. But that always happens. You can go to a second grade class of 7-year-olds, and there's disruptive kids. There's 10-year-olds, and there's disruptive kids, and it's disruptive to the other children. So you always have disruptive kids. Maybe they're looking for attention, or if they've come from undesirable homes. But at what point do you say, we no longer want you to be here because you're disruptive? Is it when they're 7, 8, 16? I mean, at what point do you make that policy call? It's true that you have a good case that there are disruptive kids. But at what point do we decide to stop teaching them because they're disruptive and we'd prefer that they didn't show up? And secondly, to Representative Guerra, talked a little bit about the lower end, and I don't know if this is the appropriate...
All questions through the chair, please.
Oh, through the chair. Sorry about that, Mr. Chairman. But you have in your packets an amendment that's been brought to us. I don't know if this is the proper time that you want to address that, but we do have an amendment that we're sort of neither for nor against, but we're willing to put in our legislation if it's the will of the committee, and that changes our lower end, which is currently 7, down to the age of 6, and I believe that's in your packet.
Thanks. And just a brief follow-up on that, Mr. Chair.
Representative Guerra, just for the committee, is this the amendment we're talking about?
No, Mr. Chairman, it's 24LS1240/A.1. And I believe I gave that to the committee. Is it in your packets there?
I don't have it.
No.
Let me give
so this would be
so
a CS? Do we have
it.
To accept a CS?
This is, no, this, Mr. Chairman, this is an amendment.
Okay. This is a sponsored amendment.
Through the chair, it's an amendment that has been brought to us and that we're willing to carry in this legislation if it's the will of the committee to adopt this amendment.
Well, when we get to committee discussions, we'll talk about amendments.
Thanks. Mr. Chair, that's an interesting issue. Some of the most important childhood learning occurs at ages 4 and 5, and so my point really is we should join most of the other states in having a preschool program for children. Moving it from 7 to 6 when most kids are going to school at 6 anyway. I don't know that that's going to change all that much, but I'll entertain that issue.
Just for the committee's information, Representative Guerra, Representative Wilson, and I are working on that. We're scheduling one right now with Mrs. Murkowski, I believe it was the second Thursday in March or something. We're working on that. We're putting together that program. We're gathering information from the National Conference of State Legislators and what other states have done, so we can have that support information, so that is going to be part of our future discussions.
We could get that to you, too. We have it.
So. Got it. Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't expect you to respond to this, but I'm pretty torn here, because it's obviously we all want kids to graduate and be successful in life. But I was a school nurse for 9.5 years. The school district was a big school district. There were 4,000 kids in the school district, but that was with 5 schools. And many, many times, I, as a school nurse, would go out and get some little kid to come on, just get dressed, and I'll just stay in there and wait. And maybe mom was home, and I would get him to come to school. But I found while I was doing that, and I did it many times, when I did that, the older they were, the less interest there was. And, you know, if I could get them and go when they didn't come to school and try to get them at a little age, at a young age, it made a difference. But the older they got, that kind of changed. And so I'm not sure that changing the school age at the top end is the answer to what we want to accomplish. I mean, you know, so if we had proof that that worked, and nowadays us legislators really are looking for proven methods of things that work, you know, and I'm not quite convinced, because there may be lots of other reasons that they're dropping out and doesn't have anything to do with the age. You know, there's all kinds of factors, drugs and alcohol and like you said, parents that don't care. But there's parents out there that really do care. And so I really want to bring that up, because there's parents that really care, want their kids to stay in school, and their kids still don't stay in school. But I've, at the same time as a school nurse, I did a lot of teaching in the schools. And I taught classes kindergarten through 12th grade, depending on the subject. And it's very difficult for a teacher to teach when there's somebody there that's not there to learn, and they're being disruptive in class. So we do have a dilemma, because we do have these things that are happening in schools. There's no doubt about it. I'm not sure that changing the age is the right way to go. I would rather much rather see it changed at the other. I would much rather see it changed to age 4, because that age 3 to 5 is very, very crucial, and we would be much better off. We would save tons of money if we would do that. And that is an area where it's proven that if we can make the changes at that age, it makes a huge difference. There's no proof that at an older age. Now, there is proof that kids have, if they have, depending on the assets that they have available to them, and part of that is adults that care. It's just very, you know, this is a hard one. And so I'm kind of torn, and I don't know for sure what I'm going to do yet, but I don't expect you to respond to that.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to say, if it's okay, to congratulate you, Representative Wilson, for taking that time to go and pick up those kids, because I'm sure it did have a positive impact on their life. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Okay, if we could keep responses somewhat condensed. We've got a lot of people online. We've got people in the audience. I want to make sure that we get everybody's voice heard.
Oh, just one more. I tried to
Representative Lynn.
I got 3 different comments. You had referred earlier to my making something about holistic education, and that's good, but I don't recall actually using the word holistic. It's kind of a multiple syllable word for me. I don't use those too often, and I just don't remember that. Probably wouldn't get elected if I used multiple syllable words. Secondly, I can tell you as a school teacher that there's a heck of a difference between a disruptive kindergartner and a disruptive 16-year-old kid, believe me. Thirdly, I understand that, and I agree, that some of the best education is done at early years. And maybe it would be better to lower the mandatory education to lower years. But at what point do you do that? 7 years? 6 years? Somebody said 4 years. How about 3, 2, 1? How about at birth? Do we want the government, child be born, the government immediately takes possession of the child, and the government educates the child because they know better than parents, some of whom are not as good as others? Are the child going to be a ward of the state education system from childbirth? Do we want that? I don't think so. So these are very important questions, not only on the practicality of giving the quality education that we want to give, but, you know, there's some pretty important philosophical questions involved here. The child does not belong to the state. The child does not belong to the school system. Maybe the child doesn't even belong to the parent. Maybe it belongs to the creator, and the parent is the guardian of the child. But here on earth, the child works with the parent. And good parents, bad parents, but we have to go with what we have here. And I'm very concerned about quality education. I guess we could say holistic, but that's not what I said earlier. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to hear from Representative Gatto and then Representative Salmon, and then maybe we'll go to some of the folks that are out in around Alaska.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just made this phone call because I had asked this question, and the question came back to me, what do you mean by enrolled in school? And the question was, do you mean in class? Because school can involve outside of a building. So if the legislation passes that says in school, we have to be able to include all these alternative ways for a child to be in school without being in class. Does the bill cover specifically allow for that?
Through the chairman, to answer your question, I alluded earlier to the 12 exceptions that they have in statute. And I think it would be helpful perhaps for the committee to go through those. But any type of equivalent education is considered an exemption. So if you're in a homeschool program, that's an equivalent type of education. If you're in a vocational program, that's equivalent education. If you want to go to your local school board and say that you have an individualized plan that you'd like to do, which is equivalent amount of education, then you could do those. So, and I'll refer to that. That's in statute 1430.010, those 12 exceptions.
Having a job is a pretty good education in itself. Would that be included?
Through the chair, if that was approved by your local school board, then yes.
I see.
Representative Salmon?
Yes. I'd like to just the education system that we have right now, especially in the rural areas, you could always tell in the villages, which is not like a public school in Fairbanks or Anchorage, because of the size of the village, is that you always know which kids are doing good, whether they're in school or whether they're just there in town. And you know which ones at an early age that's going to really become productive in life, seems like, you know. You have a pretty good, you know, after a while, you get that little gauge. I don't know where they get it, but this is like coming up with 17, I guess. But so we have two experienced school teachers on this committee, and they've indicated that, you know, where does the number come from, you know? I mean, does it just come magically? And we need to think about these other kids that are in school. And the schools that I personally went to is a boarding school. And a lot of times what happens in school is carried on back into the dormitories. And some of those cases are not very good. And the kids doesn't want to learn, well, then they should be released. That's my personal theory, especially with boarding school. So that's all I had to say.
Thank you, Representative Salmon. Representative Garris has just a quick question.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, you had raised the issue of doing some more research on early education. And in the bill packet that we put together for our early education bill, we had attached a research report which has studies on the value of early education.
We'll be glad to accept that when we hear the bill, Representative Garris.
Pass this out to other members of the committee as you're doing your research.
Right now, Jacqueline, you may maybe just want to stay put during some of the testimony. I really want to make sure that we give a chance for the public to talk about this, and they may have some questions for you. And then I'd like to make sure that you're available to answer their questions. I guess we'll start with Debbie Joshlin from the Eagle Forum. I think Debbie's up in Fairbanks. Yep. Then we've got some from Fairbanks. We got Huna. So let's go with them. Okay, and just try and keep it real quick.
I'm sorry, I just introduced myself and I wasn't unmuted. I'll try that again. My name's Debbie Joshlin, and I'm in Delta Junction. I represent Eagle Forum Alaska with a membership of over 1,000 people. I'd like to give people the benefit of the doubt, and so I'm going to say that whoever wrote this bill really meant well. But the fact is that raising the compulsory age of education is a misguided effort, as has been discussed pretty thoroughly here by the committee, and I am in complete agreement. There is a problem with dropouts. There is a concern about our young people, and we do want them to get a good education. We want what's best for them, and that is a good education. But raising the compulsory age won't change what's going on with some of our young people. It won't do what I think the sponsors of this bill intend. It won't provide a better education. If a 16-year-old doesn't want to be in school, they're not going to learn because they're being forced to sit in school. There were some comments made earlier about the decision to continue on with an education or not to, and how that impacts the rest of their life. Well, just for some comparison value, I can remember when the legislature discussed parental notification for abortion, and the age was bandied back and forth. Should it be 16? Should it be 17? And I was all for making it 17 because I considered that to be a decision that impacts the rest of your life. You can't go back and undo abortion. You can later, once you've gained some maturity or there's some stabilization in your life, you can go back and finish your education. And that doesn't always happen, but it does happen sometimes when things get stable at home, or when a young person reaches a little bit more maturity, they'll go back and finish up that education that they missed out on. Unfortunately, you can't undo an abortion. I am against this bill, and I hope the committee will not pass the bill. I have some comments to make about the amendment that would lower the age of compulsory attendance, and I don't know if you'd like me to address those now, Mr. Chair.
That's fine, Debbie. Maybe we can hear from them later. I want to make sure everybody else gets time to testify. So thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
Rory Schienberger from Huna. Did you like to testify?
Thank you, sir. Thank you, everybody. This is Rory from Huna, known to a lot of you there as Dr. Cheeseburger. I've taught in the public and private system for 33 years, and my husband and I chose to raise our own children for 25 years. A family education. We just felt that, you know, we couldn't do a worse job than public education, so we gave it a try, and we did our best. I'm in opposition to the principle of this bill as it goes and relates to compulsion, raising compulsory ages, lowering compulsory ages. Again, thank you for several of you who spoke to the issue that children may more belong to parents and God than they do to Caesar. I'm concerned about the theme of small government, and that's one of my priorities. And I'm also concerned about the theme of growing decision-making for parents. Giving decisions, especially of this magnitude, back to dad and mom when it comes to lowering or raising, lowering especially of what I heard today, saving money. We may be, in saving money, we may be sacrificing family life or the cohesion of family life. And I would strongly recommend opposition to this bill. It's not a real matter of compulsion. It's not a matter of mandatory learning. Education should be free, not forced. I thank you for your time, and I hope that any of my comments have not offended any of you. I appreciate the hard work you're putting into this issue and other issues that face our state. Thank you. God bless.
Thank you, Rory. We'll now go to Matt Sue and Peter Burchell, and I hope Peter talks a little bit about a concern that I had on this is the alternate schools that we have in Alaska that do employ, you know, you were asking in Section 3 for changes to the age for employment limits for a minor who is in school. And some of our alternate programs have a very beneficial program where they allow a student to work in industry so that they can help increase their knowledge. And sometimes this is the last road, you know, the last chance for some of these kids. And I know Peter is very interested in that topic and has helped literally hundreds of kids in our local area. Maybe you might talk to that just briefly in his discussion. Peter Burchell.
Thank you very much. I've had the pleasure of working here in the Valley and around the state, helping establish 17 different alternative programs from Southeast on up to Barrow. I think there's several things. One is I'm opposed to this bill. Number one, we don't enforce the compulsory school law we have now. I always resent more and more laws coming down that we don't have the resources to, in fact, implement. And I'm more concerned about getting kids to drop back in and take care of business. I'm not a coddler. I'm pretty hard-nosed about student behavior. And I think the next thing we have to look at is what is the purpose of high school. Mine is that, in fact, to have the social skills, career skills, and academic skills to be successful adults. As far as the transportability of this model, we started a new program out in Dillingham. Has some very startling statistics. I had the pleasure of going back to Washington, D.C. and sharing that with our delegation. 100% of the parents attend the parent conferences 3 times a year. The school averages 85% attendance. 80% of the students have positions of employment within the community. The 8 of the 10 graduates last year had passed all 3 exit exams, and in spite of the fact they'd failed them as sophomores and juniors. And I think I'm trying to do this in a real big hurry. We have to start looking at programs drop in. I think Representative Gatto knows me well enough. I never tolerated bad behavior in classrooms or in the school. I think the proof of that is we had one fight in my last 9 years at a school that averaged 10 to 12 students being referred by the courts each year. Another issue that I've always had, and that is that we keep talking about changing the school funding, but we never talk about the reward system that I proposed back in 1991, which is take all the school budgets and, in fact, that they give out 90% of the money based on the October count, hold back 10%, set whatever goal you have for school attendance and retention, reward those communities and school districts that keep their kids in school. It's wonderful we now have the No Child Left Behind, certain aspects that we know whether or not they're becoming competent students, and then reward the districts that, in fact, meet those goals, and the other districts that, in fact, did not reach them, their budget would be reduced by 10% the next year. So, in summary, I know these programs work. Kids are wonderful, and they may be naughty today, and when they come back, I've had students that have come back up to 7 times, graduated, and I have the pleasure of seeing them in the community. They're working good jobs, being good parents, and being good neighbors. Thank you for the effort on this one, but the bottom line is we have to start looking at programs that work. Head Start is still the most effective dollar spent in education, and we have to get communities. It isn't the school's job to educate kids alone. It takes the agencies, the parents, the churches, and all of us working together because, in fact, it takes all of us. If you remember that, even God had a sense of humor. If he wanted us to all be not working, he would have put the wife and I after 38 years in the Garden of Eden. He put two teenagers with one rule. They broke it, and they blamed the snake. Well, today, all these laws, of which they choose to break whichever ones are convenient at a given time, the only difference is they blame everybody for their transgressions. So thank you very much for your time and your consideration. Please think through. We've had too many bills out of Juneau over my last 23 years in Alaska that were made with very, very good intentions. However, the negative consequences of that interaction was higher than anybody could ever stop and consider. So thank you once again.
Thank you, Mr. Bushell, and thank you for all the work you've done in the community, and just for the committee here, so that their knowledge is, she's done so much work for the community, they actually named one of the alternate schools after him. Representative Gatto?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Hey, Peter, it's really great hearing from you, and I was going to say essentially what the chairman said, is that it is no surprise that the school in the valley that has people clamoring at the doorsteps to try to get in is named Bushell High School. And I wanted to congratulate you on the record in public and for all to hear that you started this school from nothing in a kind of a, I'm not even sure, was it just in a mall somewhere?
No, we started with half a portable. The fire department condemned us. Get this out. Then we had to go to the mall in a free space for the next 2 years, then the Colony High School in the library for 3 years, and then now where the LIO is located in Mat-Su is our old school. And then we got a wonderful grant from the state to buy a Chevy dealership, and we now have the prettiest school in the nation built in a Chevy garage. And even the kids that drive Fords like the building.
With a skeleton in a front window.
Nothing wrong with Ford.
Thank you, Mr. Bushell. Real quick, Representative Garrett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Peter, thanks for the testimony. You made a comment, and you said the best money we spend is on things like Head Start, and I just want to clue you in that this year's budget, due to a federal reduction, includes about a $200,000 cut to Head Start, so I hope you'll remain active on that issue, too.
Well, I will. You know, people ask me, what's the most valuable part of the program at my school? We were picked a model school in the nation dealing with two aspects that you've spoken to. One is teen parents, because the girls, the boys have to go to work, take the parenting life skills classes. That way those children were being raised by their teen parents, but in fact with the help and support of the agencies plus our daycare workers. The second award that I'm extremely proud of is that we're selected as the top alternative school in the nation dealing with adjudicated youth, because in fact the courts would, it was kind of like in my time you could go to the Army or go to jail. Well, in the valley for a long period of time it was go to the alternative school if they will accept you, and or you can go to McLaughlin, and this year's cost per student there is about $80,000 a year. So
thank you, Mr. Bushell. We really need to make sure we get everybody able to testify.
I quit.
And we'll let you know when we do get into the early education development program. Let's start at the top of our list here. Peggy Collin, superintendent of Juno School District.
Is right here. Would you
okay,
like me
you're
to
excused,
say?
Jacqueline.
Thank you, and thank you for considering this. And I appreciate the introduction of the bill as a support and advocacy for students and all students in Alaska. The dropout rate in Alaska is too high. The dropout rate in Juneau is too high. I agree that this would not be a single solution, but I do believe that this would be part of the solution and would be part of the solution that that you as policymakers could establish. The districts, and I could enumerate them, but we're doing a lot of things, and we hope to do more, and we hope to turn the dropout rate in Juneau. There is a tendency to push out, and the push out is possible at 16, and we're trying to curb that tendency, and having the mandatory and compulsory age to 17 would help that. In terms of a magic age and the perfect age, I'm not sure, you know, we'd ever be able to establish it for all. I think 16 is too young. One of the things we have learned about brain development is that the ability to plan for the future, the ability to look ahead, make those cause and effects links, it's in the frontal part of our lobe, and it's one of the last things to develop. It develops over time, and it's not fully developed by 17, but it's more developed by 17 than it is by 16. So there is some brain development to support moving the age. I think this bill actually helps mom and dad. I work with a lot of moms and dads who want their kids to be in school, and the kids don't want to be in school. And if we had the bill, I think it would help those parents to encourage their students to stay in school longer. I also wanted to talk a little bit about who these students are. These are not students that are ready to be written off. I can only speak for Juneau, but the statistics in the Juneau School District is the students who drop out are largely successful. They are largely able to do the work. They have, in terms of the state tests, 60% of them have passed either at a proficient or advanced level, the reading, and 60% have passed at proficient or advanced level, the writing section. Only 50% have passed the math. But the majority of these students are students who can be successful in school. We're not ready to write them off and for their future. They also, as some of the speakers have said, they do come back. 2 years ago, which is the most recent, I could grab data quickly on, 27% of the students that dropped out in Juneau came back. And I think that that's great, and I'm happy that they come back. But coming back, I don't think, is an easy thing to do. And some years it's up to a third of the students who drop out come back. If we can hold them, I think when they come back, they would probably say, I wish I hadn't dropped out. I'm further behind now. Some of them are in special situations where that wouldn't be the case. But to be brave enough to drop out and then take the initiative to come back, I think, is huge. And the fact that a third of the students do, I think, which shows that there could be even more that would benefit if they hadn't dropped out the first time, and changing the age would have helped that. On a personal level, I taught in a school. Actually, the original way you could get into the school was if you'd been expelled from another school, and we lightened up our requirements, and as long as the principal knew you soon would be expelled from that school, you could get into our school. But those students were difficult students, a large part of them. We worked with those students, and parents came back years later and told us, it was wonderful, it was a very rewarding job, how wonderfully we'd done with those students and whatever. And and we did try hard, thinking back, but there's a lot of other things I think, I could do and improve on. But a lot of it was that we got them through that period of their lives. A lot of them was that that we had a school that they could attend, and they got through that period, they moved through, and then they were ready to be successful. So I think the bottom line on this is that we're not writing these students off, and that they're not students that we should be writing off, and that we can help the parents keep them in school by increasing the age to 17.
Thank you, Ms. Cohen. We'll now ask Carl Rose. Questions from the committee?
Ms. Cohen or from the sponsor's office, could you get me the study that the statistic comes out of, or just the page from the study that the statistic comes out of that says Alaska has the second or third worst dropout rate of the nation?
That might be better there. I know more about Juneau than I do the state.
So. Thank you.
Just one question, Mr. Chair. Mm-hmm. Do you do an exit survey when the student drops out? Do you go to their house and ask them?
We do now. We haven't. We did it in years past, and for this year, we are doing it. I don't have the compiled data. It's something I can look into. We are. We're doing a lot of different things. The other thing we're doing is to try to stem the dropout rate. Is that we are doing an entrance interview for every freshman to find out about the students, make the connection with the students. Every student has that, and then we can build with that. So I don't have the data. We will. We've been starting to compile it this year. But I can tell you percentages, some of them, we have 39%, the largest group, are what we call administrative drops, which are students who have been absent and basically sort of walked away from school. 25% went on to get a GED, 13% for basic other reasons, 8% for medical. So I do have those numbers I can provide.
And just
for the chair, sorry.
Representative Guerra, I believe the statewide average dropout rate is around 47.3% of Alaska Natives and 65.2% for other races. Representative Thomas?
I know that Juneau has had this dropout problem for years. I was just wondering why it took so long to get to the idea of an exit poll.
We had, through the chair, we'd done it in the past, and we, and again, we do know, and we know those who dropped for GEDs, that we know we've done it, and we're just returning to do it. Our dropout rate is actually less than the state average. I mean, it's horrible, but it's not that we're extraordinary in the state.
Representative Gatto.
Thanks. You mentioned that some of these students have already passed portions of the qualifying exit exam.
Yes.
Would you say that a student who could pass all of the portions of the qualifying exit exam ought to be allowed to drop out?
No, I would not, because at this point, the high school graduation qualifying exam are competencies that are not the same as what we expect of a 10th grader. It is given at the 10th grade, but it's not doesn't test the 10th grade standards. And for in terms of opportunities for further employment, students need to have high school level algebra and geometry as a minimum, so that when they decide later in their lives what they want to go and do, that they are that they successfully has those skills. Those are not what is tested on the current high school graduation qualifying exam. They're more minimum skills. So I think that it's a they're reasonable level for competency, but I think that we should have higher standards, and that a high school diploma, in terms of credits, should be higher than that.
Thanks.
Real quickly, Ms. Cohen, if you could make a comment first. Does the Juneau School District have an alternate school or alternate
we do.
Program? What effect would that have on your program if we changed the age from 16 to 17 where you could go to work?
I think that the effect that it would have on both schools, we have one high school, large high school, and an alternate high school, would be that we'd have more students in the school. And if there's, again, there are exceptions and areas of need, and so if there was a reason to go, I could see that the school, they would go to the school board and do that. But in terms of the statistics that Representative Thomas was asking about, that's a very few percent, and I just lost that page. Here it is, there are only three students that dropped out for a family reason, which I would might be to go to work and help support the family. There were 11 that dropped out to go to the military, so there's some employment. So anyway, so that's not a huge group, and if they wanted to petition to do so, they could still do so.
Representative Wilson, quickly.
Just one question, thank you,
certainly.
Mr. Chairman. Peggy, what are your numbers every year approximately that drop out in Juneau?
Well, let me grab that. It's about 700 individuals.
A year?
Hmm.
Out of how many?
Over 5,000 students. In the whole community, but that's K-12. Over that is middle school and high school, so it's about not quite 3,000 of that.
Thank you.
What classes?
Certainly.
Primarily ninth grade. Let me grab that. About 2% about of are in middle school. 29% are in ninth grade. 27% are in 10th grade, 22% are in 11th grade, and 16% are in 12th.
Can you get me those same figures with ages?
I don't have them with ages. It's about, but I can tell you that about 30, the numbers I was just giving are from year before last, because that's when I have the most thorough report. For last year, 33 out of the 146 were 16.
But
I was just wondering at how many of them drop out at,
right, I can,
are all of them were 16 that were in the lower grades?
No, that's, again, through the chair. For this last year, 33 out of 146 that dropped out. Let me get my, sorry.
Follow up with that.
Okay, let's see. This is... The 700 were the four-year count. Thank you. I was just trying to figure that out.
Okay.
We had 146 students this last year that dropped out totally.
Okay.
and 33 out of the 146 were 16. I can give you the others. But you're right, one of the reasons that is that they are credit deficient, even though they're capable students, and that's why the largest number are freshmen.
Representative Lynn.
When somebody, quote, drops out, how do you confirm it? How do you go to the home and see where they are? Maybe they just moved out of the community, moved out of Alaska.
Right, and those are called no-shows, and there are a large number of our dropouts. Let's see, over 30% of our dropouts are those. We presume if there was not a request for a transfer of records that, you know, to another school, that they dropped out. But we were just cleaning up some of our numbers because a group of students decided to form a special middle school, and they enrolled in Yukon Koyukuk's Correspondence School. We showed them as dropouts, but we were able to chase them down and discover that they did drop out of the Juneau School District. So we do need to own that. But what they did is they officially transferred to another district in the state. So it is complex.
There may be some number, unknown number, who in fact did not drop out. They did something else, went somewhere else.
Right, and if it's a Coast Guard family that moves out of town and the school they go to didn't get their records or whatever, we show those as a dropout.
Thank you.
Ms. Cohen, I'm going to ask you to, I think there's many members of this committee would like to know that information.
Mm-hmm.
That's some very good questions, you can provide us with some excellent information, there's been a lot of other questions here, I think, that we want to get provided to this committee. And at this point, I do want to allow Carl Rose and Richard Benavides to testify on this. We'll hear a little bit of testimony from our committee here, but I think at this time I will announce to the committee that it is my intent to hold this bill so that we've, first off, for these several reasons, so that this committee has a chance to see what all the answers to all these questions are. I know I have some other ones that, the effect on alternate schools on the dates. Representative Guerra had some good questions there that he'd like to hear from other school districts on what they have to done. We've got an amendment here that you maybe want to submit as a CS that has 7 changes to this bill, which is quite extensive changes to this bill. So just for the committee members.
I'd just like to state, I really appreciate the work that you're doing as chairman of this committee. You're doing a lot of hard work on this and other bills, and issues like this, very controversial issues, very important issues, and it takes a lot of work to put this together, and I think I speak to everybody in the committee that congratulate you on how well you're handling this very contentious bill and others.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Representative Lynn. Representative Thomas?
Yes. Just for the record here, I think between Representative Salmon and I represent 25 school districts. We don't know who has the 13 and which one has 12. I think he has 13, I have 12. So, you know, when you sit there and we have to make a decision, most people represent one, maybe, or a piece of one. So we have, you have 7? Yeah, that's nothing. So, and when not one of your school districts call you or make comment, we're kind of hanging out there by ourselves, and we'll be crucified one either way anyway if you do this. But I just want to let you, the committee, know that we're huge with this, the school districts. And so when we represent 25 out of, you'll tell us how many?
53.
We represent half of them.
Representative Salmon.
I'd like to just clear that one record. I mean, I had about 30 hits on the computer from my area, so.
Yeah, and again,
and none of us is for it either.
Again, if I could ask the committee members too, you know, when I received the emails on that, I brought them over to Representative Wyrock's office and asked them to compile what is the biggest question that we have here so we can make sure we get those answers. If you could get those to her, maybe that'll help them come back with a CS that will help address some of these issues. Carl Rose.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. We have a resolution that asks for extension from grade 6 through 17. I believe the majority of my membership is they haven't given us a direction yet, but they will soon, to move down into early childhood. A lot of that information and research is available, and if we're going to make the kind of impact that we want to make with our kids in school. We need to get started sooner, and I will point out a couple reasons why. First of all, right now, when you talk about the upper limits, the age 17, we have two standards now. One is graduation, and another is 16 years of age. So the message we send to our youngsters is we want you to graduate. But if not, at age 16, it's okay to make a decision to discontinue your education. Oh, and by the way, for graduation, you have to pass a high school qualifying exam with a few hurdles. And you have to meet benchmarks all the way along the way, which takes me back to the other end of the spectrum. Young people who come to our schools have to be proficient at the third grade level on our benchmarks. If we don't have kids coming to school early enough where we can help them if they have not had that kind of attention at the early age, the issue becomes one of grade level proficiency. And I want to jump ahead. Let's take a look at the No Child Left Behind Act. We are working to comply with the No Child Left Behind Act, and it's brought a lot of focus on what we do. But I would say with you, the critical issue behind No Child Left Behind is one of grade level proficiency. Grade level proficiency. And then when you talk about grade level proficiency, you start to take a look at the subgroups. This is going to get a little bit technical, but I'm going to keep it short. The subgroups of English language proficiency, ethnicity, disability, and socioeconomic poverty. These subgroups, because of the focus, will have an increased identification on how schools do. I just want to share with you, it's not just simple enough to be at grade level proficiency. You have challenges that you have to meet. Schools are trying to provide opportunities for kids in these specific areas to get the education that they need. I will tell you this, that if we had an additional year, that student would be a year closer to meeting the requirements of a graduation. Now, I've heard a lot of testimony here today, and I have to admit, I can't disagree with everything I heard. As a parent, I want as much latitude and say in my child's education. But I will have to tell you this, because people have offered personal testimony. And I will share with you this. I was born in a rural area in Hawaii. It's on Maui. It's Kihei. Rural, you think. Think of Kihei before not irrigation, and you'll find a lot of red dirt and kiawe trees. Okay? I spoke pidgin English. I was not proficient in the English language. This is not a new story. This is our story here in Alaska. I'm dyslexic. Much of my testimony, I don't read. I know what I want to say, and so I say it. I didn't find this out till after I graduated from college. I went through the military before I realized that I was decoding. And lastly, I come from poverty, all four subgroups. We have a couple school districts in this state where they're 90% of their student body. In the Kuskokwim Delta area, 90% of their student body is not proficient in English, ethnicity, they're in poverty, and identified below grade level, and so they're disadvantaged in terms of disabilities. Entire school districts are struggling with this. These are some of the complications we have. What we're asking for is a little more time to help kids be proficient. If we could get them a little earlier, it would be great. At the front end, I agree completely. If we could hold them just a little bit longer, we give them an opportunity to get a little bit closer. Somebody mentioned earlier about decision making at a young age. You know, when I was 21, did I put money away in a 401k and save for my retirement? God, I sure wish I would have did more when I was younger. Didn't we all? At the age of 16, do you think that they're prepared to make the kind of decisions that could have a lifetime of impact on them? I'm not saying government should be involved. I'm saying we should take a look at this and look at the public policy and what we employ and decide. Does it make sense to try to get to them earlier to help them be proficient at grade level? Does it make sense to try to hang on to them a little bit longer if we can and send the message, you can't quit at 15 when you turn 16. You have to make a commitment to stay here. And I understand that some people will have checked out long before then. But for kids like me, I was not given that option. And my life is different because of it. So I wish I could offer you a more compelling testimony, but I would just share with you this. What we're trying to do here is to comply with an entire set of legislation, statutes, regulations, and we call it our educational system, and we need the time to be able to do the best job we can for our kids. Some will not succeed, but we need to give them the best chance that we can. So with that, I'm going to cut my testimony short, and I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
That's compelling testimony, and I really appreciate it. I know it came from the heart.
Thank you.
Chair.
Representative Garrett.
Mr. Rosen, you don't have to come back up to the podium, but just to follow up on your also support for early education, I hope the Association of Alaska School Boards will also help us, so I'm not standing alone on trying to reverse this cut to Head Start funding this year.
And I also have a question for Mr. Rose. If you could only have one or the other, how would you weight the advantage of early education versus the extra year at the later age?
The way I would, my association has one position, but all of the research that we have directs us to the earlier level. If I had to pick one or the other, I'd take both.
Is it possible?
You got to run for office.
See amendment.
Is it possible if we do the early education, we really won't need to address the later education because the kids would be capable and happy and willing to complete high school? So we could get a spin-off from an early investment rather than no early investment and then just trying to be remedial in the later years.
Through the chair, the issue that I brought up of grade level proficiency, if we could attain that, I believe we would achieve our goal at the upper end.
Representative Thomas.
Yes. Carl, do you have any problem with moving the student count out to the end of the year again so that they don't sit there and say, well, I'm going to keep these kids one more year just because I have this school that I can't keep full, but I'll drag them dropouts back in here for another year and use them for the foundation formula.
Thank you, Representative Thomas. Through the chair, we also heard a comment about this from one of the prior testimonies about withholding some money until you have a better idea, and then
good idea.
I would be concerned about the punitive effects of that. But in answer to your question, I would say, if we were to move the count to later in the year, I believe we would be moving towards a forward funding type scenario. And myself personally, I think there would be some benefit to that. So if you were to move the actual count date back, you'd really be looking at that count date to fund the subsequent year. And I don't want to do Richard's work for him, but I think forward funding is probably the result of what you'd be doing if you move the count date.
Mr. Chair, I wouldn't have any problem with that if the student that you're trying to drag back in the school's not being used for just foundation formula money and then hold them there till the count's over in October and say bye-bye, you know, we just needed you to keep that chair warm. And I have to go back to my days in school where the ones that were allowed, like myself, were put in the back of the room because I was talked to everybody and they used to tell me, shut up, you know. So now we all do. Sound like my uncles. So that's where they put the louder students, you know, and eventually I worked my way up the front only because I got this class first. But anyway, started losing my thought. But I've been around a long time too. I've watched the changes, and there were some comments about, if I may, Mr. Chair, about people who dropped out and are not successful. I think you'll look at several of our state leaders who came to Alaska when they were out of the eighth grade, who are the leaders in the state and multimillionaires. And you know, they'll sit there and tell you, I came here with $2.25 with an eighth grade education, and I made it. Yeah, there's an exception, but you know, it does happen. You find your niche, and I have to just defend that one that decides to be a dropout and become a fisherman or something. You know,
thank you, Representative Thomas. And I had about $100 when I got here. also, just for some committee information here, Carl and I have been talking a little bit about what we can do on some new IT programs for the state of Alaska, trying to reach out into rural Alaska and and we'll be presenting that to the committee as soon as possible. And Representative Wilson wanted to, I just want to make sure everybody's available here before anybody has to leave. Representative Wilson is asked, and we're going to try and put together on March 2nd, I was trying to remember that date earlier when Mrs. Murkowski had her Blue Ribbon panel on early childhood development programs. That'll be on March 2nd. We're going to try and put together a joint meeting between Hess and Education, and hopefully we can address this issue at that time. Let's hear from Richard Benavides, and if he needs to talk.
Mr. Chairman, my testimony was going to specifically target the amendment, if indeed it were adopted, so I'd like to defer any kind of comments that I might have specifically for that, if we take that up at another time in your committee, if I may
say. I think that would be a good thing, Richard. And of course, your name for the record and all that was Richard Benavides from Senator Davis's office. And again, as I had asked, the sponsor, the Jacqueline Tupou from Representative Wyrock, is to include this amendment into a CS so that the committee has a good chance to look at that, or if we have to look at that and some of the other questions and be informed on that. At that time, I think we've heard everybody. Is there anybody else in the audience like to testify on this? Okay, we will call this meeting to an end.